morning. Good morning. Morning, ladies and gentlemen. I think we should start now. This is the Portfolio Committee on Human Settlement. Welcome back, honorable members, those that have been on recess. Welcome back, those that have been doing constituency work. Welcome back, those that have been sleeping in their beds. Time to work now is now. We are back now. As all members know, and gentlemen and ladies know, that we, all committees are embarking on a budgetary review recommendation report process, which will culminate in the medium-term budget review. We are starting that process now. Our program for today is going to be a long program. This morning we are dealing with the Financial and Fiscal Commission, that they will give us a report on its observation and audit outcomes of the department. That will be followed by the Public Service Commission on their observation on the capacity of the department. And then the Auditor General will also give us his audit outcomes based on the department. We're hoping that process will take us up to lunch, and then we will break for lunch, and then in the afternoon the department will then come to present its annual report. Having been armed and being prepared by these entities that would have given us their observations in this morning session. You might have noticed that the minister is here with us, but she's just here briefly. She will be leaving in about 30 minutes from now. She's going to the cabinet meeting, but she just felt that she must just sit and be visible. So, welcome, Minister Lindiwe Sisulu. And I want to believe that the Financial and Fiscal Commission is ready to present to us. As soon as everybody is settled and the lady stops talking, we will then do that immediately. And otherwise, what is important for us for this morning's process is that it gives us all the ammunition so that when we deal with the department in the afternoon, they have given us the missiles. So please take your missiles as they present those missiles, then you use them in the afternoon and too. So without any waste of time, I'm going to hand over therefore to the FFC. They will introduce themselves, who's here, and then do their presentation. My name, as I hope you know me by now, my name is Nokawe Mafu. I'm the chairperson of this portfolio committee. Thank you very much, and you are all welcome. And what we will do, maybe, is that before I even give the FFC to report, the members, I'll just give the members to introduce themselves to the FFC, just because they are not with us every time, so that they know who's here. Maybe let me do that first. Honorable Ngam.
Hi, morning. Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Lungi Nganga Kabashi, member of the portfolio.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Habukwe Memezi, member of the portfolio committee.
Morning, Chair, colleagues, and ladies and gentlemen. My name is Ndumi Sotapa, member of this committee.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Makashile Ghana, an ordinary member of the committee. Thanks very much.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Tandega Gada, a member of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Those are the members of the committee. I'm sure the others are still on their way, but we are going to continue. Then I'm going to hand over now to the FSC.
No, thank you, honorable chairperson, honorable members, honorable minister, and colleagues. My name is Bongani Khumalo. I chair the Financial and Fiscal Commission. I am accompanied by immediately on my left, Commissioner Sipho Lobisi. Next to Commissioner Lobisi is Mr. Eddie Rakabe, who is a member of the Secretariat and the Program Manager for Fiscal Policy. And then at the back is Dr. Hamed Amusa, who is our Program Manager for Public Finance and Macroeconomics. We would like to appreciate, on behalf of the Commission, Honorable Chairperson, the invitation to come and brief the committee as requested. When I was looking at the request, you know, sometimes I have some conversations with the Auditor General. I actually ask them what it is that they are going to say that I might not say. And I then said to myself, I don't want to repeat what they will say. And so I tried to be creative and selective and put some context into some of the issues that we're picking up from the Auditor General's reports. So we will try and respond to the question, but also put some context into some of the issues that come out of that. And our impressions of where we are going. I think the first page basically just talks to the content of our presentation. So I'm going to skip that. The role and function of the Financial and Fiscal Commission. I think I will also skip that. On the next slide basically talks to the mandate of the department and its own strategic goals. Again, we don't have to go into any detail around that. And then we look at the MTSF as it relates to the department in the next slide. And again, those are very clear issues that the department will be able to talk to on its own. Now, when we get to the next slide, we then start to look at what has actually been happening in the period since post 2009. I think it's important that from the Commission's position, our point of departure when we look at some of these issues is to look at the 3 years, at least 3 years prior to the year that we're dealing with, and then also looking at the 3 years going forward. Now, we observe that there is a trend that we're seeing around the delivery of housing. There are certain changes that have actually happened in terms of policy that have either meant that the department deals with certain aspects of human settlements as a function, and sometimes some of the functions have been shifted also out of the department. So that creates certain challenges that one has to take into consideration in terms of looking at where we are going. Now, I want to leave the rest of this briefing to Mr. Rakabe, but maybe before I do that, just to make one or two observations coming out of the overall assessment that we have done. What we have seen is that what we have noticed is that in relative terms, there has been a decline in housing units completed compared to the rate at which the allocations have been associated with the delivery of houses, or also a tighter environment in terms of ensuring that norms and standards are actually adhered to. So we can't say that when you observe that type of a trend, you make a conclusion that there has been a decline in the department's outputs. There are certain issues that have been happening within the environment that explain those types of developments. And then a second set of issues that we would like to raise is that there seems to be continued underspending in Limpopo, and the result is that money keeps on being shifted from Limpopo to other provinces where delivery is happening. So it's underspending which is not accompanied by any improvement in delivery. And I think when we raised it the last time around, we raised it in the context of if you shift the money, if you withhold the money because there's some underspending that has happened, so you then reallocate it to somebody else, there has to be something that kicks in immediately, automatically, that beefs up the capacity of that province to be able to absorb the money, and then you can actually bring back that money too, so that the province can continue with its business. Now, where this becoming an occurrence, you don't want it to be an annual event that at a certain point in time we will shift money from Limpopo and give it to somebody else, and there's nothing that is happening in Limpopo. So that is an issue. And then from a division of revenue point of view, there is also, well, division of revenue also related to policy. There is still this uncertainty around the accreditation process, which unfortunately has had to result in certain transfers having to be stopped to certain municipalities who had been originally assigned the function. Now, we know that a decision was taken to reverse that. It's important then that when those types of decisions are taken, we then also put in place measures that ensure that going forward, there is certainty as to where we are going in terms of the system. I mean, the policy on accreditation as a recommendation of the Financial and Fiscal Commission dates back to around about 2006. And so there's been work that has been done consistently over those years, which needs to be taken into consideration as well as we move forward. I think, Honourable Chair, let me hand over to Mr. Ragabe to then take you through the detail of the presentation. I think one of the things that comes out of the analysis of the budgets, I must say, is that there has been relative improvement. Let me say the performance of the department is relatively good compared to where we were, let's say, 5 years ago. So there's been an overall improvement in the performance of the department. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll take you through the rest of the presentation. I'll try to be very brief. Chairperson, we've also tried to look at how the whole issue of human settlement interacts with the rest of the economy, and this is just to give a little bit of a context to the presentation and obviously the mandate of the department. What we note, Chairperson, is that the current property market remains very buoyant despite the weak macroeconomic outlook, but at the same time, we're starting to see a decline in residential building applications. So we suggest that going forward we may actually see total slump if the economy does not total slump in the residential property market if the economy does not improve. the prices again they are normalizing to correct for the boom that have occurred between 2000 and 2007. And the reason why we obviously focus on the prices because it's got an impact on affordability levels of the people, particularly those who are outside of the subsidy housing framework. We're also noting that currently there is inflationary pressure, which are almost likely to push the prices down. It will benefit the consumers who want to buy houses, of course. But again, the other issue that we need to point out is that as much as the prices are going down, they actually remain high in relative terms. And obviously, high prices and high interest rates deter access to houses, especially for the low income earners. When you look at the average price for a small house currently, we're looking at about 852,000 rand. And obviously, this is way beyond the reach of many households who earn very little to afford funded housing. The average interest rate for low income groups is even higher. Because obviously there are risk implications, and that in turn affects their ability to access bonded houses. There's also another issue that we've looked at, which is the availability of sufficient stock of affordable housing, especially for the houses that are below 500,000. Because I mean, there are also the gap markets that we also need to cater for. So when we look at the availability of stock for below of housing stock below 500,000, it's very small, and I think that's an issue that also needs to be looked at. And but the issue there is that we don't have sufficiently available well located land, and there also the issue of high building costs and the high back spaces costs, which affects the house prices. Chairperson, just looking at the whole issue of house price, the price of the houses, this graph here just shows how the average price has been growing and is projected to increase over the next 5 years. As you can see, in 2015 alone, the average house price here is about 1.3 million rand. Again, the point that we're making there is that for many households, this average price, house prices are very high, and obviously they won't be able to afford if there is no assistance from government. The other important issue that we looked at again is the high levels of indebtedness of the household, which actually again affect their ability to afford the bonded house. And we've raised this matter in the last detailed report that we did earlier on alternative mechanism for delivering housing. This issue came out very strongly because what we found was that many households are actually unable to. The reason why they are unable to afford houses is not only because their income levels are lower, but also because they are highly indebted. And if you don't reduce the indebtedness, obviously you won't be able to address their housing needs. Moving forward, Chairperson, to the budget allocations of the department, the slide here is just to demonstrate that the budget allocation of the department has been increasing gradually from just under 7 billion rand in 2006 to over 35 billion rand in 2017-18. This is not to say the rate of increase is sufficient, but I think it's just to note that there has been at least a gradual and consistent increase in the allocation. But when we look at the rate at which the allocation is growing, which is a concern to everybody and the Commission, but again, it's a reflection of what is happening in the economy currently. What we see is that the rate of growth in the allocation is beginning to decline. Is beginning to decline. Just for this. The current MTF, we are seeing an average growth rate in the budget of about 3%. But again, it's not only limited to the Department of Human Settlement, but it's just a reflection of what is currently happening in the economy and the tight fiscal constraint that we find ourselves in. terms of the allocation of the department per program, what we know today is that program 4 actually accounts for a bigger proportion of the budget, almost 97.6% of the budget is accounted for in program 4, and that is because it's where the HSDG program and USDG program are based, and that is why we see program 4 taking quite a chunk of the allocation. Looking at how the department has performed over the years in terms of spending, this graph actually just shows that, again, as the commissioner has mentioned, that the department's performance is actually improving. The average spending has now improved to almost about 98% of allocated funds compared to where we were perhaps 5 years ago. But overall, what we noticed is that even over the past 5 years, average spending has been about the 97%, 98% thereof, which is not a bad thing at all. When we look at the spending performance by programs again, we also note gradual improvement in spending in performance. Again, the average spending there is about 98%. So again, there are no big issues there, except that in the case of Program 4, where you will find allocations from the provinces like your Limpopo moving away to other provinces, as much as it reflects a good performance, it's a concern in the sense that where houses should have been built in Limpopo, for instance, they have not been built, but they were built elsewhere. I think this slide is just to emphasize the point which I've just made that Program 4 shows consistent good performance over the past few years. Again, there is an issue of concern over Limpopo, especially with respect to HSDG. For the past financial year alone, I think almost about 67% of HSD allocations to Limpopo was actually redirected to the other provinces. That is a cause for serious concern to the commission, and I'm sure the committee as well. We have made some recommendations earlier before about the issue of allocation being stopped, especially due to underperformance. But the department has actually acknowledged and accepted our recommendation, but we have not seen that recommendation being implemented. And the result, obviously, is that the provinces like your Eastern Cape and Limpopo will continue to see this serious housing backlog if the concerns around underspending are not addressed. I think this slide, Chairperson, is just to again emphasize the point which we've already made. When we look at the grant performance, especially with regard to USDG, what we know today is that by March 2015, only 50% of the grant was spent. Obviously, it's a risk again, which needs to be properly managed to make sure that there is no underspending in the grant. Again, with respect to the issue of accreditation, Chairperson and honourable members, is that the Commission in the previous years have made a recommendation that municipalities which demonstrate a capacity to deliver housing should be accredited with a housing function, and this recommendation was supported by the department. And what we have seen as part of preparation for the municipalities to be accredited, there was a grant which was introduced, human settlement capacity grant, which was introduced about a year ago to operationalize accreditation and functionship. But however, what we have seen is that there have been some problems, especially around the transfer of that grant to municipalities, and as a result, we've seen a serious underspending on that grant. And going forward, their proposal even to do away with the grant completely. Again, it's an issue. Obviously, there are decisions which have been taken, but because some of the municipalities have already appointed people, have already in preparation, in anticipation of taking over the function. If you take the grant, obviously, it means that they've got to take money elsewhere to address. But again, it also introduces uncertainties on their part and on their planning as well. This slide, Chairperson, just shows the outcome performance in terms of the size and units targeted and planned. Again, what we see there is that there is not necessarily a great variation between what is planned and delivered, and this is suggesting that. The department or the provincial department rather are getting the alignment between their plans and their performance and their performance correctly. Chairperson also looked at the financial performance of the public corporation, in particular the three agencies that report to the department, the Social Housing Regulatory Authority, the HHDA and the National Housing Finance Corporation. What we note there is that, especially with respect to the Social Housing Regulatory Authority, there are risks there. The for the past financial year, the spending performance actually shows that only 14% of the allocated funds was spent, and that of course is an issue. And for the rest of the agencies, the performance is very good. Now, this is just a point to just to show that some of the programs within the department are actually not doing very well. If you look at program 3, for example, as much as the allocation is not that very big, but it actually shows that there's been consistent underspending in this program, and we think that the reasons for underspending in that program should be identified and be addressed. As much as it does not take a lot of money, we actually think, because that obviously compromises delivery of the outcomes of the department. Now, looking at what the Auditor General, and I'm sure that because they will be presenting, I think Chairperson will skip the slide and allow the Auditor General will address the issues that have noted concerning with respect to the department. Here, Chairperson, we just need to emphasize the issue of the shifting of the housing function. That the commission has recommended earlier, that if we continue with these uncertainties, the results may actually be dire for both the municipalities and the intergovernmental fiscal relations system in particular, because we see a trend where grants are introduced and terminated abruptly because of all these uncertainties, and obviously this undermines the plans of the municipality. And again, there's also an issue about the provinces, and both provinces and municipalities neglecting maintenance on some of their assets that have to do with this function because of this uncertainty. So if we leave it very late, we may find that the fear that ultimately take over the function will have to deal with a very large maintenance backlog. Again, this is just to show the impact of how this accreditation uncertainties have had on the division of revenue, and just to show the, and we demonstrate this through the human settlement capacity grant performance. As of in the past financial year alone, some municipalities could not even, I mean, city of, you know, you get city of Jordan, they could not spend even a single cent of the grant. Again, it's an issue that we are saying we think that the committee should be following it up. In conclusion, Chairperson, this is just to note that overall the department's performance has improved significantly over the past 5 years. Average spending is about 98% of allocated funds. Target with respect to sites and top structures were narrowly missed, and this obviously has to do with the issue that we faced about Limpopo. Again, the issue of the human settlement capacity grant, only 8.5% was spent due to late release of the grant. And just to note that going forward, there is a proposal to discontinue the grant next year, and the proposal is that the municipalities will be allowed to use certain portion of USDG for capacity building. But when we look at it, the original intention of USDG was not necessarily to build capacity, especially in respect of taking over the housing function shift. So again, this is just to say that needs to be resolved as soon as possible. Chairperson, with that, I think this concludes our presentation. I will hand over to the chair to just say last word.
No, thank you, Eddie. No, Chair, I think I do not think that I want to add anything unless Commissioner Lubisi would like to say one or two with your permission, Chair. No, he says he is covered, so let's hand it back to you, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Khumalo and Mr. Rakhade for that presentation. Honorable members, that's the presentation from the FFC on their observations on the department, on the audit outcome. Comments, questions, clarity? And if not, you know that there's no crime. You can just go to the next one. Honorable Lemezi, what's the others are still thinking?
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think we must appreciate the report. It's really enlightening. A bit depressing in as far as the general housing situation throughout the country, you know, the indebtedness of our people, the high levels of the pricing. Now, I want to hear from Commissioner that if this situation, from where you sit, what can be done to assist, because we exist. To assist our people, if we all note and agree that the housing that is available out there is out of reach to many of our people. Now, what do we do? So is there any solution that you may want to suggest? Because we would want our people in Padlan, but those that were previously prevented to really own real houses, not mud houses that we grew up from, all of them, majority of us. So, what solution? We will note here the situation in Togo, somehow even in Eastern Cape, the fact that the department was advised but not really done corrective measures rather than just relocating the money. I think we take that, we're noting it. We are happy you are saying that. We are also noting even other areas that are on the acquisition side of the municipality and also their poor performance. I think we're noting when at the right time we'll then see what to do. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Memezi. Remember, you are interacting with the department in the afternoon. So some of the things that the FFC is raising is what you would need to understand from the department when they present in the afternoon. Mainly, many of the things is to arm you, to be prepared to debate better with the department in the afternoon. Any other comment of authorities, Honorable Pastor?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. I would like to ask a question to the Commission whether the recommendations that they have highlighted in the previous years, perhaps 2013, 2014, has been implemented. And also, if these recommendations, depending on your answer, were not, I shall assume some of them were not implemented, looking at your report, what is the process from your side that you have to follow to make sure that the department does implement those recommendations? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kwata. No other comments or questions? Just maybe before the commission responds, I think what in essence, Honorable Kwata is saying is that once you observe and you make these recommendations, your interaction with the department, how is it? And in that interaction that you do with the department and you raise these concerns, maybe we would love to have that sense of the nature of that interaction and how does it normally transpire. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Members. So let me start with the with the last question. Just to put a context to the Financial and Fiscal Commission's recommendations, when the recommendations are made, they are made in different contexts. There are recommendations that are made on an annual basis, which are made in terms of the Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations Act and Section 214 of the Constitution and the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Measures Act. And then there are recommendations that are made as per request of departments, subsection 3 of the Financial and Fiscal Commission Act, which allows any organ of state to request the commission to provide it with an assessment and recommendations on any financial and fiscal matter. And in that section also, the commission can make of its own volition. Now, the processing of the recommendations, because the Commission makes recommendations to Parliament, primarily it's to Parliament and the provincial legislatures and organized local government. It is a good thing that the Commission will engage with the executive on those recommendations and will reach certain agreements. And depending on the nature of the recommendations, the executive will respond when the budget is tabled through the Minister of Finance. However, it still remains the responsibility of Parliament to ensure and follow up on the implementation, because sometimes the Minister might come in and say, we agree with the FFC, and then obviously we must implement. Now, if the implementation then does not happen, so I will give you an example of such a recommendation that we raised in this particular presentation. In 2006, if I'm not mistaken, we made the recommendations on the need to accredit municipalities that have the capacity to deliver on human settlements. The reason behind that was that human settlements, at that time, we're dealing with the Department of Housing, but we were looking at what the role of a municipality is in the construction of a house. Because it's not just the house, it's got to be connected, and municipalities in terms of the constitution have the responsibility for connectivity. connectivity infrastructure. So you wanted to bring this in one place. So that recommendation was made then. It was accepted at that time, but it was also accepted that we need to ensure that municipalities do have the capacity to be accredited. And they need to build. So over the years, some municipalities went ahead and tried to build on their own. But around about 2011, 2012, there was this big drive. So the conversation was taking place all along since 2006 or somewhere there. Was taking place all along around that particular matter. And around about 2012, we were approached by the department to look at now the financial and fiscal implications of shifting that function or assigning that function now to these metros that had been identified as almost ready for that kind of an accreditation process. So there was very thorough work that was done between ourselves and the department, and also together with the provinces and at some stages with the relevant municipalities. We calculated certain numbers. Some of the numbers were not yet clear. We did make a recommendation that proceeds, but please ensure that APCD is taken into consideration before you fully assign. So we have moved that far. So when at that stage when a decision is taken to take a step back and review, which is probably informed by very genuine concerns, it then becomes important that you bring back the commission into the loop to actually for us to be able to understand the context under which this has happened. So for us, we would be expecting that Parliament, as soon as Parliament basically sees that this has happened, they will still come back and say to the Commission, no, you recommended ABCD, this is where we were at, can you give us your view in terms of what has now actually taken place? So we would expect that naturally. We wouldn't expect to pick it up in the newspaper because some municipality is now saying we want to approach the FFC because of this decision that has been taken. We wouldn't like to interact with Parliament through those types of... So what I'm saying, Honourable Member, is that it is of equal importance that when recommendations are made to Parliament by the Commission, Parliament then is able to keep also the Commission under the loop, because Parliament must ensure the implementation if the recommendation has been accepted. We cannot, in terms of our powers, we cannot force the implementation of our recommendations. They are recommendations. So we cannot force governments to implement the Commission's recommendations. Government still has the final decision on the basis of having considered those recommendations and responded to the Commission as to why it will implement or why it cannot implement, and that is processed through Parliament. Honourable Members, I think the one real question that you asked that I think needs a response from me, because the rest are really comments. And part of that question is, as the Chair has indicated, will actually the most appropriate people to ask would be the Department. What now? What must we do to assist many of our people in relation to the dire challenges that they are facing, given the costs of housing? Now, in the past, our recommendations, I think, around about 2012, where we did quite a detailed assessment of the forces at play within the housing human settlement delivery, we actually arrived at calculations, big figures that were quoted around what we will need in order to address the backlogs given the approach that we were taking. So the first set of issues related to taking a step back and reviewing how you actually, what sort of a model, how how you deliver to the poorest of the poor isolates the demand, the market, and say this is the approach that you will take, and these types of people, this is the approach that you take, so that those that are the neediest, I don't know whether there's a word like that, those that are most in need are prioritized. So you prioritize. It's not a you. Yeah. So you look at segmenting that market on the basis of need, and you prioritize, because if you are looking at that kind of money that you require, because there are backlogs that you inherited, and then there are backlogs that are ongoing as a result of people moving from one area to the other, and invariably you find that where they have moved from, they probably benefited from a house that the state has built, and so you are building houses, they are following people, and that's probably not the best thing that that you can do. So you've got to manage that process. And I'm aware that the department has actually taken to looking at some of those issues now to say, no, how do we eliminate the duplication where people benefit twice or three times just because they've located or relocated to certain places? So that's one of the issues. The other issue, which relates in a more direct way to the indebtedness, and that was a government position to say, let's look at how we do amnesty for some of the people that whose debt was incurred in this particular type of profession. And I don't know, I've never actually looked at the numbers and also what the outcomes are, but I know that there were those efforts aimed at trying to deal with that issue as a broader societal issue, because it cannot be just a function for the Human Settlement Department to deal with broader socio-economic conditions that individuals find themselves in, which end up excluding them, unintentionally excluding them from accessing finance, even when they can access finance to actually play a role in the housing market. So you can have people that now you must provide housing for, because they cannot get access to loans to. So you have all of those issues, and invariably they require intergovernmental and interdepartmental coordination to actually address. I think that is what I can say. I'm not sure what the department's own policies are, but I know that there's a lot of effort that has been put into, because we have participated in one or two of their strategic planning sessions, a lot of effort that is put into ensuring that some of these duplications, in especially in terms of, because it's a waste of money, and I think the minister has been coming out very strongly as well in terms of segmenting the market and saying people of this age and people of that age, it begins to talk to some of those issues on how you then deal with these things. Otherwise, everybody is poor in terms of however they define themselves. And if we actually work on that kind of a definition, so all I'm saying is that the means test is an important part of it and how it is actually implemented. So otherwise, everybody is poor, and we can all be in a queue for a house.
Thank you very much, Mr. Khumalo. I think from our side, one of the things that we could give you as a parting shot is that we note the fact that the issue of the accreditation would need a bigger interaction with the cells, and I've just been noting with the staff that there's going to be a need of a meeting that must be arranged between the FFC and ourselves, particularly because you were at the forefront, you were a big role player when it started. We would welcome to hear your views as the committee on what is happening right now and your observations. Of course, now, here and now, you were not able to take us into your thoughts and your understanding. So that meeting is going to take place very soon. We think it's important for us. And of course, one of the big things, I think, what once we would be discussing that, it's also going to be very important to also hear your views about the, we note and we see what you said about the issue of the capacity grant. We saw that. We will discuss it further with the department in the afternoon, but we would like to hear your voice in that meeting. We hope that that meeting is going to take place before the end of this year. We will communicate with you in due course. Thank you very much for that presentation, and we want to thank the team from the Financial Fiscal Commission on sharing your views with us. I think we're finished now with the FFC. I'm hoping that the Public Service Commission is here and ready. And because now you would need to come to the front if you are at the back to take your position and unseat, you must unseat to the FFC. and you must do a coup d'etat and take your position to the front, and then so that you prepare to present to us as they move. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. As we settle, we are going to hand over to the Public Service Commission to present to us. Unfortunately, some of them were not here when we were introducing ourselves, honorable members. So don't get tired to introduce yourself to this beautiful people of South Africa, that they know you. I hope by now you've catch my name.
Yes.
The name is Notoya Mafe, and I'm the chair of the committee, and I'm going to allow them to quickly introduce themselves, and then you can introduce yourself.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. My name is Lungi Nganga Gabashe, a member of the portfolio.
Thank you, Chair. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Ndumiso Papa, member of the committee. Again, I don't know when they say Kappa.
Morning, Magash Legana, an ordinary member.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Tandeka Kada, the member of the portfolio. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next to Honorable Magash Rabashe, she is going to come in probably as you introduce yourself. Over to you. You can introduce yourself and then you can just proceed to the presentation.
Okay.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Lulu Sizani. I'm a nationally based commissioner of the Public Service Commission. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee. I am Richard Sizani. I'm the Deputy Chairperson of the Public Service Commission.
Just want to make sure. Did I hear correctly?
Yes.
Sizani. Okay. No, I wanted to make sure that.
But.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm Sidney Vivier, and I'm with the Office of the Public Service Commission.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm Carmen Dominguez-Smith. I'm also from the Office of the Public Service Commission.
Good morning, members. My name is Nose Chiu Gwaza. I'm the Parliamentary Officer for the Public Service Commission.
Thank you very much, and welcome to the Deputy Minister, Honorable Zokota Frederick. We are about to get a presentation from the Public Service Commission. We've just had a presentation from the Financial Fiscal Commission, so we welcome. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson, for inviting us. Good morning, Honorable Deputy Minister. I just want to make a few opening remarks before we make our presentation. Madam Chairperson, we are very grateful for this opportunity that is given to us to make these assessments on departments. We have had to review it as a Public Service Commission, our role in playing these assessments, especially this is one of the committees that has been consistent in inviting us. And therefore, we've been asked by our Portfolio Committee on Public Service Administration to actually do a full audit each year of the departments, especially on the area which we specialize in, which is human resources and also integrity in the public service, and insert them in annual reports of departments, because we have indicated that this committee has always asked us to do these things and would like in future years to be much more specific so that we don't cover areas that are covered by the Fiscal Commission and also covered by the Auditor General, because they have vested that. We stick to the areas that we are good at, which is the human resource evaluation and also integrity and assessment. So that will be coming on. We are in the process now of consulting on indicators and unpacking the values of good administration that are in Section 195 of the Constitution, and also identify areas that we would want to concentrate on, which are challenges in the public service, on human resource management. And this is one of the key stakeholders committee that will consult on those indicators. The second thing I would like to mention up front, Madam Chair, is that apart from us using secondary documents like the annual plans of departments, we have had in this report a strong engagement and consultation with the departments, including the acting DG and also the head of human resources, corporate services. And so we have checked the documents and also updated the facts as of today, as opposed to what would have obtained in the annual report of the Auditor General. So we are very pleased that the department cooperated in working with us on those areas. And we have also raised the matters that are here, so that we can get a plan from the department as to how they are going to be handling them going forward. I would like my colleague from the Public Service Commission to briefly take the commission through the areas that are important to us that have been made in the presentation.
Thank you, Deputy Chairperson. Honourable members, the presentation will cover an introduction, financial management, expenditure versus performance, current expenditure trends, payments of service providers, accountability, professional ethics, transparency, good HR practices, employment equity, and we'll make some concluding remarks as per the request of the Portfolio Committee. The PSC is required by the Constitution to provide an evaluation of the extent to which the values and principles governing public administration contained in Section 195 are complied with. The Public Service Commission was requested to brief the committee on the capacity of the department in spending the budget allocated according to their business plans and annual performance plans. The presentation will focus on the constitutional values and principles And in doing that, we have looked at the annual reports of the department for a period of 4 years. We've looked at other available data, such as TSC tools, the Auditor General Report, Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation Report, National Treasury, and Women Lena. And like the chairperson has indicated, we've also obtained input from the department to ensure that the information that we share here is updated. The first slide, I'm not going to go into too much detail because I've seen that the Auditor General is going to make a presentation, but what we have found is that for the past 3 years, the department has had unqualified audit findings. The major key issues that we have identified from the Auditor General's report is that the department has materially underspent for Program 3, which is Program Delivery Support, and only 70.6% of the allocated budget was spent, which impacted negatively on the achievement of departmental objectives. Then a human resource plan was not in place as required by the public service regulations. Leadership did not implement effective HR management to ensure that adequate and sufficiently skilled resources are in place and that performance is adequately monitored. And then lastly, a special audit on rural housing infrastructure was finalized and concerns raised pertaining to the overall management of the program, monthly processes, oversight over service providers, and the quality of structure. Then looking at expenditure versus performance, there's a table that reflects a four-year trend analysis, and except for the 2012-13 financial year, the spending of the department was within the generally accepted margin of 2%, which is set by National Treasury. On the right side of the table, it reflects the percentage achievement of targets, and although most of the entire budget was spent over the last 4 years and there has been improvement on the achievement of targets, the achievement of predetermined objectives remained fairly low, and at 68% on average over the four-year period. The major reasons for underspending reflected in the annual report is the late submission of invoices, which resulted in payments of approximately 4 million rand being made in the new financial year, and the delays in the filling of vacancies due to the conditions of service funding reduction in the 15-16 financial year. The next slide is expenditure versus performance, but on a program level for the 14-15 financial year. And in essence, it shows that in respect of program 2, which is human settlements policy, strategy, and planning, they had the lowest achievement of predetermined objectives at 58%, and this was largely ascribed by the higher vacancy rate in the department. Then with regard to reporting on performance information, the Auditor General had found that significantly important targets were not reliable when compared to the source of information or evidence provided, and this was due to a lack of standard operating procedures for accurate recording of actual achievements and inadequate review to verify the validity of reported achievements against source documentation. It also reflected that there was a lack of proper systems and processes and technical indicator descriptions, and there was a lack of documented standard operating procedures in the department. Looking at current expenditure trends, as of 31 August 2015, the figure shows that over the first 5 months of the year, spending has averaged out, and spending for August was closer to the norm. Some of the reasons for the under-expenditure for the first quarter included spending less on investigations within the department, which was still underway, late invoicing by the Department of Public Works on the operational budget, delays in the implementation of the National Upgrading Support Program, and advance payments to the Government Communication and Information System. Then, looking at 30-day payments of service providers, the Public Finance Management Act requires of accounting officers of departments to settle all contractual obligations and pay on all money owing within the prescribed and agreed period. That period is prescribed in the Treasury regulations and is 30 days. The table at the bottom shows the average invoices paid after 30 days and the average invoices older than 30 days not paid. If you look at the average invoices older than 30 days not paid, you will see the average rand value is 3.7 million. This is largely, if you look back at what I've indicated earlier, it's the 4 million rand invoices that were carried over from the previous financial year. at accountability and the filing of performance agreements, if the principle of accountability is to be achieved in the public service, executive authorities and heads of departments should visibly support performance management processes and ensure that this gap goes down to other levels of the senior management service. Compliance with the submission of CAs by the HOD for the first for a period of 5 years shows that only 1 year there was compliance in that the PA was submitted by the due date. Currently there is an acting DG, so the PSC is not expecting the submission of a PA. If you look at the HOD that was appointed for the period 2010-11 to the beginning of 2015-16 financial year, no evidence exists that head of department was evaluated by the department. In respect of the senior management service, the compliance rate is quite high. It's 93% for SMS members, and 90% of these members' performance assessments have been completed. The reason for the non-submission of outstanding performance agreements by members of the SMS were mainly that managers failed to finalize performance agreements on time and acting appointments. Then looking at the National Anti-Corruption Hotline, the PSC receives cases from the National Anti-Corruption Hotline and forwards it to national and provincial departments in accordance with the Greek Protocol for Investigation. The strategy to refer cases for investigation to departments is premised on the assumption that departments have the capacity to deal with the cases. The figures show that the closure rate by the departments remains unsatisfactory, but the feedback rate is 100%. What is meant by the feedback rate is every 40 days the department has to provide information to the PSC on the progress with the investigation. Looking at the financial disclosure framework, all members of the senior management service are required to disclose the particulars of their registrable interests, which is companies and properties, for instance, to the respective executive authorities by no later than 30 April of each year. And then the executive authorities have to submit the copies of these financial disclosure forms to the Public Service Commission by no later than 31 May of each year. That figure shows that for the past 3 years, the PSC has not received the financial disclosure forms of the department. In 2012-13, 87.7% of the forms of its members, including the DG at the time, was received after the due date on 20 June. For 13-14 and 14-15, no forms were received by the PSC by the due date. The department has confirmed to the PSC that individual SMS members have completed the forms, but they were not submitted to the PSC. We have also, in the past financial year, the financial disclosure framework, the forms were submitted through the e-disclosure system to the PSC, which is an electronic system moving away from the manual system. And the e-disclosure system shows that 22% of SMS members submitted their forms to the EA in the department. Looking at precautionary suspension, suspension should not exceed 60 days, and extended periods of suspension have a negative effect on service delivery, the management of discipline in the workplace, and also on the employee who has a right to work. The table shows that the department has suspended employees for extended periods, and in respect of the last financial year, two people were on suspension for an average number of 499 days. Then moving to transparency, the department's website we have found is user-friendly and most documents are easily accessible. The Promotion of Access to Information Act gives effect to the constitutional right of access to information held by the state and any information that is held by another person that is required for the exercise or protection of any right. Section 14 of the PAIA stipulates that the information officer of a public body must compile a manual containing prescribed information. The department's PAIA manual is available on the website and is translated into all the official languages. Then, annual reports are a key accountability mechanism, but it only serves to promote transparency if it is comprehensive and easily accessible. The department's annual reports are easily accessible and is available on their website. The most annual performance plan for 15-16 is also available on the website, which shows an improvement from the previous reporting period to the portfolio committee. Um, The 14-15 annual report we've mentioned earlier reflects that the Auditor General has found that there's no human resource plan in place as described by the public service regulations. The PSC followed up on this with the department, and the department provided proof to the PSC that it has a human resource plan for the period 2012 to 2017, and it was reissued in October 2014. The annual report should also reflect information on the department's service delivery improvement plan and a report on consultant appointments using appropriated funds. No SDIP, service delivery improvement plan, was approved by the department by March 2015. They have indicated to us that they do have a draft available, and following inputs from the Department of Public Service and Administration, they are augmenting the draft service delivery improvement plan. The table there reflects the use of individual consultants, and it shows that although the number of consultants is increased over the years, there has not been a significant increase in the cost of consultants. The department also indicated that a decision was made to temporarily augment capacity by means of appointments of consultants from the goods and services budget, while the department takes up reductions in the compensation budget with the National Treasury. Moving to good human resource practices, the table there reflects that as of August 2015, the vacancy rate in the department was at 16.5%, which is well above the 10% norm set for the public service. The reason for this, the department indicated, was that there has been a moratorium on the filling of posts since November 2014, when it came to light that they had a 54.7 million reduction in the compensation of employees' budget. They've indicated that they recently revived initiatives to fill vacancies as a result of some savings accrued from the attrition of staff. If we look at the figure there, it shows that the highest vacancy rates are experienced in Program 3, which is Program Delivery Support. But in Program 4, the vacancy rate is also quite high, especially if you look at the vacancy rate as at August 2015. Looking at grievance management, the promotion of sound labor relations in the workplace is an essential aspect of human resource management. And given the importance of human resource management, which is pivotal to the effective administration and service delivery, it is essential that grievances are well managed. The table reflects that overall there has been an increase in grievances over the years. If you look at the table, it would appear to that there is a discrepancy between the number of cases lodged and the cases resolved. If you look, for instance, at 2011-12, seven cases were lodged, but nine cases were resolved. This is a result of carryover grievances from previous financial years. So the discrepancy is because grievances are carried over from one year to another year, which isn't a good practice because grievances should be resolved as close to the point of origin as possible and as soon as possible. Then the next slide deals with good human resource practice and also with the nature of grievances in the department. And it shows in essence that in the 14-15 financial year, there was a substantial increase in the number of grievances dealing with performance management. However, this increase is a general trend in the public service as a whole. The PSC has conducted research in this area and has recently found that employees approach the system of performance management with a culture of entitlement for merit awards. They have been lodged grievances resulting because they are largely dissatisfied with the final outcome of the assessment, and these assessments mostly relate that they were not awarded or granted merit awards. Under employment equity, the target of 50% women at SMS level remains a challenge for the majority of departments. It appears that the department experiences challenges to retain women employees at SMS level, given the decline in the percentage of women at SMS level from 13-14. The figure reflects that in 13-14, 45% of SMS members were female, whereas at August 2015, it was only 39%. Looking at people with disabilities, according to the information on FASHL, there has been no improvement in respect of the employment of people with disabilities over the past 3 years. The partial information reflected that the department only has one person with a disability. However, the department has given the PSC proof that 8 people with disabilities are appointed or employed, and that puts them at 1.2% as at August 2015. That indicated that to mitigate the issue of employment of women at SMS level as well as the people with disabilities, they have an approved employment equity plan, they have a gender equality and job access strategic framework and implementation plan that will promote the equity targets. Then, in conclusion, the department has maintained its audit record of unqualified audits over the past 3 years. Although the effective spending of the Rural Household Infrastructure Grant remained a challenge, the grant was transferred to the Department of Water and Sanitation in July of last year. Similar to the previous financial years, the Auditor General made adverse findings in respect of the usefulness and reliability of performance information reflected in the annual report. There is therefore a need for the department to improve on accountability. The spending norm as of August shows that the department has a minus 5.3% deviation. Spending therefore has substantially improved over this financial year. The PSC is concerned about the maintenance of professional ethics in the department. There is insufficient improvement in the department's ability to deal with cases of the National Anti-Corruption Hotline, and no financial disclosure forms were submitted to the PSC by the due date. This impacts negatively on the executive authority's ability to monitor and deal with potential and actual conflicts of interest. In respect of employment equity and the filling of vacancies, further attention is still required. And then the available human resource capacity is augmented by employment of consultants and employees additional to the establishment. That is to mitigate the issue of the filling of the high vacancy rate. And then lastly, the PSC is of the view that the department is well positioned to spend the budget if the highlighted areas in the presentation are addressed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's the presentation from the Public Service Commission, mainly on the HR issues relating to the Department of Human Settlement, which we oversight. Comments, questions, narratives? Honorable Memezi, Honorable Ghana, and Honorable Ngangasabash.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much for the presentation. Indeed, it's quite helpful, enlightening us. Just to check one point on disclosure forms. When these are not coming, are you doing anything like checking the head of the association in the department? If you don't get a good response, also check the political head in the department, because I find it indeed not acceptable at all that we can allow it to go without you doing some work. I think we are noting the other points for other engagement with the department. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Memezi. Honorable Ghana.
Thank you very much. The first point is on slide number 5 that talks about expenditure versus performance. And I'm trying to understand the numbers here in terms of how it's arrived at, because it's important for one to understand how the number is arrived at. Are we looking at the, let's say, the department says they want to achieve the least 100 things that they want to achieve in a year, and then they achieve 70, and then we say they've achieved 70% of their target, or we go into details to see, all right, this particular one, it says we submit reports. We are going to submit 4 reports. And then at the end of the year, all reports submitted, 100% achieved. That's 100% achievement. But then we want to build, remember this is human settlement, we build houses. We want to build
120,000 houses, and only 95,000 are built. So when we go into this performance, are we drilling deep into the line items that are depleted, or we just look at the line items and say this achieved, this not achieved, and then we average it out, or we go deep to say, all right, this particular aspect, for example, one of the things that if you go deep into the annual report, you'll find that you have quite a number of critical aspects of human settlement, which is like your informal settlement upgrade, the loans that are being granted out, and also rental housing that has seriously underperformed, performing at less than 53%. All of these three line items. So I want to check on that. And then secondly, on the issue of suspension of days, you know, and you know, I was taught that the year has got 365 and a quarter day. And then there are two employees that are suspended in a year. And then we average it out to get to 499. And if I try to work on averages, it says if I'm saying the average number of days that there are two employees that have been suspended, and I average it out, it means it was supposed to be almost 1,000 number of days, because I have to divide it by the number of people suspended. So if there are two people suspended in the financial year, and the average is 499, which is basically all the possible working days that are available in a year, because that's what it means. And two people cannot be suspended for an average of 499 days, unless if the 499 is the number of hours. So that whole table it needs to be unpacked. So two people, 499 in a 223 working year, 223 days working year. I mean, if you take the weekends and the whole days in, I think we work on about 223 days in a year. So how do we arrive at 499? Then the last one is with regard to the codes, and I want to check whether the Public Service Commission really believes that the 54.7 million was apparently taken out of the budget for employee compensation is the reason the department has not filled the positions. Does the PSC believe that to be the real reasons why the department has been unable to fill the vacancies that exist in the department? Because it's to say, all right, now some money was taken out, so we cannot fill the position. If the 54.7 million, even if it was taken out, how many employees would have been employed even with that amount? Because it cannot be argued that all the 14.5% of the employees that were not employed by the department, the total cost for them is the 54 million that we're talking about. Surely there should be other millions that are available to employ them. And I want to check with the PSC what has been happening there, because that 54 cannot be the only reason why the department has not been able to employ staff members. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ghana. Honorable Ngana Tabasha.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. We appreciate the presentation by the Commission. We are glancing up on a number of areas. I just want to find out that on later submission of invoices seems to be a problem generally within the public service. And in your discussion with the National Treasurer, what are the are there any mechanisms to improve on this, and the National Treasury assisting all departments to improve on this? because it comes up each and every year, in all spheres of government, but also it impacts on the economy of our country, and it affects small business people. That is linked to not meeting the contractual obligations by a late payment to and put a small business person out of business and affect the economy. And Chairperson, just to note that we appreciate that the department has been able to, although it was late, to submit a human resource plan. That is noticeable and appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you very much. As I hand over to the person to respond, in your opening, you have indicated that you have had an in-depth engagement with the department, and you seem to have been very happy with the cooperation from them. But that cooperation did not translate to positiveness of what we see in the report in terms of what it needs to happen. So I just want you, when you respond, to just tell us your sense. Do you think as they cooperate for the sake of cooperation? Or whatever you discuss with them, after you have met with them, do they go back to actually deal with the issues that you have raised with them? I'm raising the issue because, for instance, on the issue of the disclosures, it's 3 years in a row that they have not been submitted. And obviously, you have been meeting with them 3 years in a row, and you really are very happy with the way the department is cooperating with the PSC. It's one of the departments that is very cooperative. What does this cooperation mean in real terms? Maybe as you respond, you would like to understand that.
Two of the questions, and I'll leave them some of the others to my colleagues. Let me start with the last response. One of the things that, Madam Chair, we must take into account in dealing with the department is the fact that the department has had a change of leadership after the election. So for part of the reasons, of the challenges that they are inherited from that issue of the previous election. Also, even now, the department currently has an acting DG who is also new after there's been an expiry of term of the previous DG. In the commission, we are organized in clusters. As organized in clusters, we are 5 commissioners, so we've divided the national departments, which are about 34, into 5. I am the commissioner responsible for this department, so I lead this cluster. So I do confirm that I have had full access to the current minister, and when he is not available for me to raise, he even gave me permission to interact with the advisors and also with the current acting DG. So we have really had discussed these matters, and I've written those. I am disappointed, as I've expressed to them, the fact that we discussed the forms, I wrote the letters and the form for the support disclosures, I filed in the department. It's a bureaucratic inertia that they have not been sent to the commission because they've been filed. So, and we've asked for proof, even when we were working on this report, the head of corporate services was in my office, and I sat with the colleagues and to go through these things to indicate. I even wrote back again to the department to say, I am going to state this thing strongly in the commission, those that are to the portfolio groups that are left out, and I do expect some corrective action. And the acting DG did confirm to us that this matter will be corrected. So I do think that I am confident that the matters that we raise at the commission are taken seriously by both the minister, the deputy minister, and the advisors, and the acting DG. Some of the things that they are correcting are matters that they have inherited over a turnaround. But I have not found it acceptable, and I have no excuse for the issue that when forms are filled, like financial disclosure, important, and we have gone through it and indicated in letters why they're important, that the officials in corporate services have not sent them to the commission, so that because the major work of financial disclosure is actually done by the commission itself in assuring the minister that we have checked through all the databases, and we are confident that these officials are clean, or we are we think that these other officials have potential conflicts of interest or real interests which the minister must check, especially even the accounting officers. So it's a matter that we will still be following up. And therefore, we have called for this because they still need to be assessed and evaluated by that honorable members. And really, frankly, we are disappointed that purely it's officials in the department who have not forwarded these things after they've been completed. And I've again reminded the department to do so. On the issue of the late submission of invoices, Honorable Kavasha, this is a very difficult problem that we're facing in the public service. We've been working as a commission together with the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation. We've also been working with Treasury. It's part of also of the outcome statement reports of the Minister of Public Service and Administration, and I serve in that forum that discusses this thing. And we've found that Treasury is trying to help to ensure that this happens. But in the last report that we had with Minister Natim Tekwa still acting in this, we still found that there was no serious progress in this matter. We emphasize the importance that a number of especially black business persons and small business persons are suffering because of this payment. And when you go to municipalities sometimes and also go to provinces, there's even a tendency to totally refuse to pay the interest. And these are people who are actually running their business based on overdrafts in banks. And municipality, when you write to them, I have written to the Etiopian municipality on behalf of businesses, I've written to provincial, they simply refuse. And we have had a public hearing as a public service commission and have submitted a full report on this. It's led by our commissioner, Madeleine Zimandi. And we've emphasized to government, and the president has been also very strong on this matter, that this is not acceptable. And in fact, what we found in the last outcome report of the Minister of Public Service is that even both Treasury and DPME have not even set up indicators of how to achieve this. They only basically collect how many invoices they can reflect. So we've asked that clear indicators must be set on this. Payments must be done. If there's a failure to pay within 30 days, you must pay interest on that. Fortunately, only a state national treasury keeps to that, because if you owe, we are owed by national treasury, they pay, but we've asked them to enforce it. So it is really a problem that we would like to be followed, and that's why we are keenly also following in this department, because housing is one of the critical areas where there are small contractors, where they really go first most of the time because of poor payment and also the corruption. One other interesting thing, Madam Chairperson, we have also checked in this area, because also of the corruption, especially in the housing sector. We have also monitored negatively to check to a certain extent that you find that there are certain contractors whose receipts are paid timely all the time. And you find that those are the contractors who pay the 10% to officials. So also we encourage the payment, but we've also monitored it to check that you don't pay only one contractor. All contractors must be paid on time and ensure that they are paid their money on time. So it's a matter that we're very serious with the commission, with DPME, and also very serious with National Treasury, but we've not cracked it.
Honourable Member Garner, in respect of the question on how we arrived at the percentage achievement of targets, we have calculated, we've calculated the indication of whether targets were achieved or not as reflected in the annual report. And if you recall, in the presentation, we indicated that the Auditor General has audited the achievement of predetermined objectives, and that have actually expressed a concern on it. So the PEC did not go further and audit the performance information because it's already been done by the Auditor General. In respect of the suspensions, the issue that you have raised, if the period is longer than an actual year, it means that the person has been suspended for longer than a year. That is the implication of these long periods of suspension. It means that the person has been suspended for longer than 1 year. Thank you.
Who's responding to the next question?
On the issue of vacancies, I think here the department put a moratorium. So there was no filling of vacancies, and they put their reasons as to why they didn't fill the vacancies. But the problem with the TSC is that when we do an audit, we do it after the decision has already been taken, meaning that the department has already not filled the vacancies. So when we report to say they have not filled the vacancies, whether it was proper for the department not to fill the vacancy or not, but we are reporting what happened because they didn't fill the vacancies. In fact, what it means is that the department was non-compliant, as we have recorded, and again, the issue of non-achievement of some of the targets can also be attributed to the non-filling of vacancies because there was no personnel to actually work and make sure that the targets are achieved.
Thank you very much. Any other response?
Just in terms of the vacancies, if one also looks at the attrition rate of females or women at SMS level, if you look at the difference between the financial year 2013 and 14 versus 2014 and 50, the significant decrease in terms of the numbers, which obviously then has an impact on the reflection of the vacancy rate. And on average, the vacancy rate in terms of achieving the target, the 2% target for people with disabilities, which obviously increases the vacancy rate to the 14.5% in 2014, and then subsequently the 16.5% in August of this year.
Also, we did indicate that there is a variance between sometimes the expenditure and the performance, even now. But I must say that I think a month ago or some weeks ago, the department held a very successful and impressive summit where I attended on behalf of the commission, where we actually got presentation from the acting director general about how they are going to remobilize both the resources and the agencies together with the department to actually ensure that they increase spending. And I think that it was a very concrete presentation. And for ourselves, we're very impressed with that summit. And that's why we said in our conclusion, we think that the department will be able to spend its resources and will be able to organize both its staff and personnel to meet their targets in terms of expenditure versus budget.
I just want to sensitize the members about the issue of these precautionary suspensions. It's something that that's very, very serious in the public service. I mean, if we look at this report, it's much better than some of the reports that we're dealing with. There are departments who suspend people for a period of 4 years, up to 5 years, people sitting on suspension, getting the salary every month as if he's employed. In fact, that would actually open another problem for those suspended employees because they can actually work in another place and get two salaries. Because if one is not really working for 5 years, 4 years, I think it's something that the committee should actually monitor very closely. It's a problem, and again, the department is not only non-compliance is also illegal. It's actually breaking the law for not for allowing the suspensions to actually go on and on and on. So the committee must actually monitor this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, PSC, for arming us. Illegal. We've heard of this. We will ask them in the afternoon why they break the law. We are not going to... Remember, now, the whole issue here is that the PSC has given us all this information and these clarities to be able to interact with the department in the afternoon. I'm not going to allow you, Honorable Ghana, to ask another question or any other follow-up. You are going to ask that question now to the department in the afternoon. I keep it to yourself. The department now must respond in the afternoon on what you want to ask. But one second.
Thank you, Chair. The cost of suspension, to be sure, is it the amount that is paid or the amount that is spent over and above the amount that is paid to the employee?
Honorable Ghana, you actually do that on full pay. So basically, the expense is that of an official who's being paid while staying at home for those days at work. Let me just also say to the tribute to the department, in discussing with the department, if you look at the annual report, you would find that these figures don't appear because the annual report has shown nil. But when we contacted the department whether there are no precautionary suspensions, they were on a they came up and gave us this thing now. So we got them. So we got the information from the department. They gave us this.
Thank you very much. It's nil in the annual report. Thank you very much. To the Public Service Commission, and we really appreciate all that you have shared with us, and we really appreciate your sense of enthusiasm that you hope that things will be better. We don't really share that enthusiasm with you. We the fact that you think that all that you heard in theory will be then go back and be done practically. The jury is still out on that one. We will let you know when we interact with you if that did indeed has happened. But thank you very much. 5 minute body break as the Auditor General's office is preparing to present.
Thank you. Yeah, sure. You can say?
Solicitor General's office is here to present to us the audit findings of the Department of Human Settlements. Unfortunately, not all of you are known by these officials, so we will do that routine introducing ourselves. Myself, I'm Nopal Mafu. I'm the chairperson of the committee, and the honorable members are going to introduce themselves to you. And then we will hand over to you, introduce yourself, and we'll do the presentation.
Good day. My name is Landa Tabasha, a member of the team.
Hi, good day, Chair. Good day, auditors. My name is Sam Friedman, a member of the portfolio.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen and colleagues. My name is Ndumi Sokapa, member of the committee.
Good morning. Makashwe Ghana.
Morning, everybody. I'm Tande Gatka.
Thank you very much. There's a form that is being circulated to the honorable members. The team from the agent's office is just asking us if we can fill the form for them, that they can take with them. I don't know what is in the form, but they've just asked me to announce that please fill the form that they are circulating. Thank you very much. Over to you, to the team. Introduce yourself, and then to the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Ahmed Moulin, and I'm the senior manager from the Auditor General's office. In front of me is Mr. Ali. He's the manager responsible from the Audit of Human Settlements, and next to him is Chakofaso Mahuma, and she's also on the Audit of the Department of Human Settlements. Quite a big team for quite a big audit, Chairperson. Chairperson, the purpose of our presentation is to assist the committee to assess the performance of the department in order for you to prepare the BRRR report. And our role is basically to reflect on the audit work that we've done. And hopefully this will be able to assist the oversight of the portfolio committee in its oversight in exercising oversight over this department. The Auditor General and our mandate of the Auditor General is actually derived from the Constitution. And it's in the Constitution that requires that all public sector departments or entities be audited by the Auditor General. However, our scope is outlined in the Public Audit Act. And the Public Audit Act prescribes and requires us, myself in the AG's office, is to provide assurance that the financial statements are free from misstatements. And we, however, do not provide assurance on the appropriateness of departmental budget. But we look at your annual financial statements. We audit the financial statements in their true context. Where we can express an opinion on the financial statements. We also go the extra mile and we look at your usefulness and the reliability of the information in the annual performance report. Included in the annual report of the department is a set of financial statements which we've audited and expressed an opinion on. There's an annual performance report where the department reports on its actual performance against its predetermined objectives and targets. And we've also audited this in terms of usefulness and in terms of reliability. We've also audited compliance with laws and regulations. So we report on material non-compliance with relevant legislation. We don't report on all legislation. Only key selected requirements from relevant legislation is being audited or was audited. And we identify the key control, the key internal control deficiencies that need to be addressed. Right? We assess the risk of fraud. It's very important for an auditor to understand what fraud there is in the environment, or if there is any fraud in the environment. But we do not we're not responsible for any fraud identification and fraud verification. If you look at that scope, if you look at that slide, the left hand side outlines what our responsibilities are and what our scope is in terms of legislation. So there's a few key documents in the annual report. One of them is our audit report. It's the introduction before your financial statements is my audit report. It tells you what are the concerns that I've identified in terms of those four areas. It will tell you whether you have an unqualified or qualified audit report. It will tell you what my factual findings are on the usefulness and reliability of performance information. It will also tell you if there are any material non-compliance with relevant key legislation and what are the internal control deficiencies related to any of one of the three above. Chairperson, I will hand over to my colleague, Mr. Ali, and he'll take you through the audit outcomes in the human settlements portfolio. Thank you.
Thank you, Amos. Thank you, Chairperson. Morning, honorable members. I'm going to take you through the slides, but I will, through the presentation, here and there refer to the document, the full document that we've also circulated. The first slide that we have is the overall outcomes for the human settlements portfolio, but these are only the outcomes for the entities that the Auditor General audits itself. Later on in the presentation, the auditees that are audited by the private firms that we have an oversight role over, we briefly touch on those outcomes as well. If we just look at the picture here, it will look like the portfolio regressed in terms of last year we had one clean audit and this year we now have no clean audits and three all were unqualified with findings. But we need to just keep in mind that CSOS in the prior year, we didn't really audit them apart from the financial statements. We did limited audits in terms of compliance and no auditing in terms of their performance information. So this is really the first year that we've audited the full outcomes of the community schemes entity. The human settlements, if you look at page 4 of the document, you'll see the outcomes for the 5 years, and it also gives a little bit more detail in terms of the different findings. Human settlements, it's unqualified again this year, same as it's been for the last 5 years. And what's concerning in terms of that unqualified with findings is that we have the same findings as we had in the last 3 years. In particular, you had your findings on your compliance plan as well as pre-terminal aggressive. We'll go a little bit more detail in terms of where there's been improvements and regressions in the different areas, but it is the same issues that we've had in the last 3 years that's repeating this year. To go to the next slide. The next slide then takes you a little bit more detail in terms of the 6 focus areas that the AG focuses on. The first one being your quality of your financial statements. In this area, on 31st of May, we receive a set of financial statements and we audit them. If there's material misstatements in those financial statements, we obviously give the entity or the department an opportunity to correct them. But if there were misstatements when it was presented to us, we will then include a compliance element in your audit report to say that the statements that you've given us on 31st May were materially misstatements, but you were able to correct them through the audit process. In this regard, the NHBRC was able to improve where last year they had material misstatements, this year they don't have. Human Settlements Department, however, they have the same areas where they had material misstatements last year, they have material misstatements again this year. And what happens is that the department is able to account for its day-to-day transactions very well, but when it comes to the secondary information and disclosure notes, your accruals and your commitments, that's the area where the department struggled in the last 3-4 years, the same area. Then if you move on to the quality of performance report, if you've got material findings in terms of your usefulness or your reliability, it would be read there. If you were clean and you had no material findings on either usefulness or reliability, you'd get a green there. In that sense, the department made an improvement in that last year they had material findings on usefulness and reliability, whereas this year they've been able to address the usefulness aspect, but we still have problems with reliability. Probably in terms of the reliability, the main root cause that we've identified in terms of why they're not able to give us proper supporting evidence for their achievements is that they don't have standard procedures, standard documented procedures as to how that information will be collected and how it will be reviewed. Also, for a significant part of the year, the head of the strategy department was also vacant. action, but what was audited was useful and reliable, we'll probably get a better picture in the next year when the operations are further along. In terms of compliance, unfortunately, all three entities that we audited had material findings on compliance. If you go back to human settlements, the issues that we've had are the same issues from the previous years. So we had an issue with regard to the HR plan. Maybe I need to just clarify this based on the presentation that we had earlier. It's not a case of the HR plan having not been done or not been approved, because there is an HR plan for 20, I think it was done in 2012, 13 for a five-year period. The finding that we have in terms of the HR plan is that DPSA requires that you submit an annual implementation plan every year by 30th of June. It's similar to your strategic plan has your 5 years, and you have your annual plan that has 1 year that you need to submit every year. That annual implementation plan hasn't been submitted for the last 3 years or so. So that's the one non-compliance area. The other non-compliance area we've already dealt with was your material misstatement. And we've also touched on the other area in terms of your system for reporting of performance information. Then if we go to NHGRC, they had non-compliance in terms of prevention of irregular expenditure, which also has been there for the last 3 years. But in that respect, the amount of irregular expenditure has been consistently coming down. So there has been improvements. It's not improvements to an extent where we can say that they're effectively preventing the irregular expenditure. And then they also, similar to the Human Settlements Department, also have problems in terms of their system to account for performance information. In the NHGRC environment, there were standards where they weren't even able to provide some of the supporting information. In terms of CISOs, in terms of compliance, we had issues with regard to submission of the quarterly reports to the executive authority. So that was in the first two quarters of the year. Subsequently to that, the third and fourth quarter, they were able to produce their reports. Most of the issues of CISO stem from the fact that it was a new entity with limited people for a large period of the year. They also didn't call any post in the internal audit until subsequent to their end, so that also then affected the audit committee's role. So you have findings then on internal audit as well as audit committee. I think that covers the compliance in terms of the CSOS. In terms of financial health, the CSOS issue, there was no non-compliance in terms of the financial health. It's just something that we highlighted in our audit report in terms of the funding model for the entity. If you look at the budgets for the upcoming or for the current financial year, they initially took into account money that they would receive from the levies, but obviously that levies hasn't yet been legislated. So we're just highlighting if it doesn't come into play soon, then it might have problems in terms of meeting their objectives. In terms of human resource management, we've already touched on the HR plan at human settlement, but in human settlements as well, there are long outstanding long vacancies that haven't been filled. We've heard earlier that the reasons for the vacancies in terms of the reduction in the compensation budget, but those vacancies are there and they also contribute to the compliance findings and to the credibility of your performance and your financial information. In terms of information technology, how they've done the colors this year is if in your design of your IT environment, your IT controls, we've picked up findings, then we've made it red. If we've picked up findings in terms of the implementation of those controls and policies, then we've had it yellow. So in terms of resources, again, because they were new, the policies weren't yet approved by year-end. In terms of NHGRC and human settlements, they've had problems in terms of their approving their security policy, their disaster recovery plan. I think in terms of NHGRC, it's more because of the transition to SEP, so they probably haven't yet completed their transition and updated their policies and their frameworks in terms of that of those controls. The next slide again deals with what the quality of financial statement. We've touched on it. Basically, it tells you that the Human Settlements Department was able to get a unqualified opinion because of the audit process. Had we given an outcome on 31st May, it would have been a qualification. That's why we're saying the quality of the ones that were submitted for audit were not without error. Again, it's just re-emphasizing that last year NHPRC was in the same position, but they were able to improve. Then we go in terms of the performance information. In terms of usefulness, the Human Settlements Department was able to improve. The plan that they've given us last year that we've audited while met all the usefulness criteria, all the SMART criteria. NHPRC, however, still struggles in this regard. Reliability, again, the systems at both NHPRC and the department are not designed appropriately to allow for them to collect all the information that they need to support the information in the performance report. Okay, and then in terms of CSOS, last year we didn't audit it. This year we did audit CSOS and there were no material findings either on usefulness or reliability. Similarly, how we had the financial statements with regard to the performance information. Unfortunately, in this instance, even through with the audit process, we weren't able to come to a point where we were where the performance reports were free of any material misstatements. So then you had material findings in terms of reliability on the NHPRC and Human Settlement. Again, most of these areas I've already touched on in terms of the compliance. I've touched on internal audit, human resource management, your strategic planning and performance. In terms of your management of contracts, the NHPRC there, it's in terms of extension of contracts, NHPRC extended contracts, but the extension was done by people who were not delegated to actually do that extension, therefore resulting in irregular expenditure, and that's the finding in terms of NHPRC, management of procurement contracts, and also prevention of irregular expenditure. Like I've said, NHPRC, there's been a significant reduction in the irregular expenditure, but they still are incurring irregular expenditure. A lot of the irregular expenditure that they are incurring is from previous year contracts, but there are still some new contracts that they've or quotations that they've entered into which weren't done in compliance with all the procurement legislation. We've touched on the quality of your financial statements. Next up, in terms of the financial health, we've already touched on that area. IT, we've also gone through. I think if you go to page 16. On this slide, we look at the unauthorized irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure over the past financial year. And in that regard, if you look at the bottom of the slide, you can see that the portfolio as a whole, the irregular expenditure is coming down every year, and probably 99% of that irregular expenditure is from the NHPRC. In terms of the department itself in the current year, they didn't incur any irregular expenditure. Then also, if you look, you see the brown is what was identified through the auditing process, and what the dark blue is what was identified by management themselves. So you can see that the processes to detect irregular expenditure at NHPRC has also been improving, because it hasn't been much that we've identified first year in comparison to what we've identified in the prior year. So it's a good picture, but we want to obviously get it to where all the entities are not incurring any irregular expenditure. In terms of fruitless expenditure, Again, it's just the energy capacity. The other two entities didn't incur any fruitless expenditure. The fruitless expenditure incurred by the energy capacity is penalties and interest paid to STAR. If you look on, I think it's page 112 of the NHPRC's annual report, they give a good breakdown of what irregular expenditure they've actually incurred in the current year. The next section of our presentation deals with the combined assurance model. We presented this model at most of our sessions. It just set out in terms of getting a credible set of financials and performance report what each role play is supposed to do. You have your three levels of assurance. The first level of assurance is the senior management and your accounting officer. Those are the people directly responsible for the reports for providing credible reporting in terms of financials and performance. The role of senior management will obviously be to take the recommendations of your internal and external audits and actually implement them, and also to design a controls that are effective in mitigating risk. Your accounting officer needs to obviously hold your senior management accountable for this. That is their role in terms of assuring that credible information is produced. Then with your executive authority, then it's a similar role, but he obviously now needs to hold, or he or she needs to hold your accounting officer responsible for the performance of the entity. The second level of assurance being your internal audit and your audit committee. Your internal audit need to make recommendations that will help in actually ensuring that findings are addressed, and also to make recommendations that will improve the overall quality of the internal control environment. So they obviously then will report to the audit committee, and the audit committee's role is obviously to now monitor the operations of your internal audit and to make sure that management actually implement the commitments made in terms of addressing findings by external audit as well as internal audit. The third level of assurance, which includes the Auditor General and the Portfolio Committee, also is similarly to ensure that the commitments of this, ensure that the commitments of the accounting officer and senior management and the executive authority are actually implemented. Again, this assurance model is only it's confined to the credibility of your performance information as well as your financial information, and not in terms of your overall performance of your department. In light of that the assurance, the assessment of the assurance provided is on the next slide, is again just in line of those reports, not in terms of the performance of the department as a whole. In this regard, your senior management, we've assessed senior management as providing some assurance, because although action plans are being developed by all our entities, those action plans are not effective in terms of actually addressing those things, those findings. Every year, all our entities will go and they'll develop an action plan. That action plan will go to the audit committee on a quarterly basis. The audit committee will review it, but it doesn't seem like it's addressing the findings, because you've had the same findings in both NHBRC as well as the department for the last 3 years. So that's why our assessment of senior management is not clean. Similarly with the accounting officer. With regard to internal audit, they make recommendations in terms of how to address the deficiencies, but those deficiencies, I think they need to play maybe a more significant role in making sure that those commitments are actually implemented. the same can be said for the audit committee, because they do review those action plans, but however, I don't think they review how effective it is. So the action plan will come to the audit committee and they'll say, okay, we've got this, this is what we're doing, but maybe they need to be a little bit more strict in terms of timelines, because the same action plans are dragging from year to year to year. The next slide deals with our drivers of key control. It's broken down into three elements. The first element being leadership. In that regard, the first line, which deals with effective leadership culture, deals with the honesty of leadership. Whether they promote a culture that which promotes basically honesty and accountability. In terms of that, we've had no issues with the honesty of any of the leadership of any of our entities. Where we have had issues is in terms of ensuring that repeat findings are not addressed, and that's why our oversight responsibility is yellow for all three areas. In terms of HR management, we've touched on the vacancy issues and the HR plan at Human Settlement. That's the reason for our not being green in that area. With regard to the community scheme, the yellow there is more just a warning, because they are in the process of filling vacancies. It's not a case of they've done anything wrong, but it's just to highlight that, okay, it still needs to be monitored. In terms of your policies and procedures, they are, like we've touched on, your policies in terms of the performance information in both NHPRC and settlements that need to be probably improved, as well as in your IT environment. And in terms of NHPRC, also the SEM policy is still not yet updated. Action plans, we haven't assessed, obviously, the CSOs in terms of the action plans, because this is the first year that they've actually had an audit report, so that will come in the next quarter. But in terms of NHPRC and Human Settlements, because of the repeat findings, we aren't able to give them a green in that area. Then again, the not having provided us with sufficient evidence for the reported performance information for NHPRC and the information not being reliable in terms of the Human Settlements Department, those two are yellow for record keeping. In terms of reporting, the Human Settlements Department is yellow, because what happens is your schedules to support your financial statements get submitted to the person compiling the financial statements, but they're not reviewed adequately by the manager in charge of that section. So we then end up getting errors in terms of those schedules. In terms of compliance, we've touched on all the areas of compliance that affect the audit report for all the entities. And we've also touched on IT controls. In terms of risk management, I think the lack of an internal audit unit for CSOs impacted on all three governance areas. Because there was no internal audit, the audit committee couldn't properly do its role, because a major part of the audit committee's role is obviously overseeing the internal audit function. So that impacted on the whole governance area in terms of community schemes, audit, key control environment. But subsequent to year end, there was improvements in this area in terms of of that entity. They do now have an internal audit plan. They have appointed people in the internal audit unit, and they do have an internal audit charter. So they've made significant progress subsequent to year end, but at the end, that was the picture. I think in terms of our root causes, as I've gone through the presentation, we've discussed all of these root causes, but the most significant root causes for the audit outcomes in the portfolio is the first one is your slow response by management in addressing previous year audit outcomes. That's in terms of your NHBRC and your human settlements. That one is glaring in the sense that we've had the same findings for the last few years. And the same, it was also a significant root cause in the prior year. In terms of instability in key positions, that's at CSOS and NDHS. We've spoken about the department. In terms of CSOS, at the stage that we reported at 31st March, the internal audit function wasn't filled, and also the head of strategy wasn't filled, but subsequent to that, they have filled those positions, but those vacancies was what resulted in the findings in terms of compliance and in terms of performance information. In terms of consequences of poor management, poor performance, last year it was a significant root cause in terms of the human settlements department, but in that area they have made some strides in terms of improving the performance management environment. So it's not identified as a significant root cause in the current year, but it is significant root cause still at the NHBRC. Then the next slide just deals with how maybe recommendations in terms of how to address the root causes that we've identified. In terms of the first one, in terms of slow response and management, it's sticking to the timelines that we have in terms of our action plan. It's making sure that our audit committee recommendations are also implemented in a timely manner. Same with also the internal audit should assess the implementation of those action plans. So if the department is, for instance, to say that we've addressed this, internal audit should do a verification check in terms of whether that's actually been done. In terms of vacancies, at the national department, we've identified three key positions that were vacant for the last 2 years, one of them being the CFO, the other one being your head of your internal audit, and the other one is the head of your strategy unit. The one of those positions has subsequently been filled, the head of the strategy, but the CFO and head of the internal audit unit should be prioritized in terms of filling those vacancies. Consequences for poor management, that one is of significance, because if there is no proper consequences for poor performance, then it creates a culture where it's tolerated. So you get comfortable in this instance in being in the yellow in terms of being unqualified with findings. You're not striving to hit that clean audit, but that goes throughout the entity in all areas. If you don't address poor performance timely, then it becomes the norm. The last slide deals with the entities that we haven't audited ourselves, that in the portfolio. It is the outcomes in terms of your compliance and your performance information, as well as your financial statements. There's been no movement in terms of those. The same entities that had non-compliance findings in the previous year, being your estate agents, affairs board, your nurture, and your SHRA, are the same entities that have non-compliance in the current year. And the same ones that were clean last year are again clean this year. There's just a slight correction on the slide. Tubulisha Homes is in both green and the blue, but they've actually finalized the audit, so they're actually in the green. They should be removed from the blue part. The only entity that had issues in terms of the performance information was the EAAB, in terms of the measurability criteria as well as the relevant criteria. That's the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. That's the agent's report on the Department of Human Settlement with its two entities. Because remember, they just audited two entities, CRISPR and NHBRC and the department. They didn't audit the HBRC. Sekolah, Manager of Tuzah Sekolah.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much to the Office of the Auditor General, represented by Ahmad Ali and Jacoba. This is arming us with ask good questions to the department, so we appreciate your advice. Just to check on the picking up on entities, because you have entities that have bigger budget than others, so one would have thought you wouldn't miss those, so maybe there was a reason why you thought this was should be the example of the entities that you are taking when they are the ones that have bigger budget. I think that is the point. Maybe one would also want to know, because you have engagement with the department, even entities, throughout the process of coming to this level. So what would be your take? Are they not, what is their answer for repeated shortcomings? Why are they not making their way? Are they not taking you serious?
Thank you very much, Honorable Kama.
Thanks, sir. Just on the two issues that you raised regarding reliability and the HR implementation plan, as you said, these are the issues that you've been raising over the last two financial years, and I wanted to check from the AG side, do you wait until you get the report from the department to say we haven't done this, or is there an ongoing conversation with the department to make sure that this, because you know it's anticipating, you know, it doesn't change much in terms of finance and so forth, but then if it's the same thing that happens every financial year, is there a way that you are interacting with the department to check if they are they're willing to change this? And then secondly, I want to check this because over 97% of the department's budget is a transfer. You know, they get transferred to provinces and metros. Whether you take into account the audit findings of those provinces and metros, insofar as the money coming from the department has been used. Because one thing that's missing, or that I'm not getting, is how the provinces themselves, from an auditing perspective, they are doing. Because the bulk of the department's money is going there. So in here, if you only you basically are looking at just maximum of 3% of what the department of the 31 billion that the department gets given, and the bulk goes to the provinces and metros and so forth. So what we take, I'll also put it in my form here, that next time when you come in, it's more helpful to us to include in there how the monies that have been given to provinces, how those departments are doing, because the departments get the money from the national one. And then finally, linked to that is the issue of the transfers. You know, there's this, I think there's a schedule of transfers, but on this date, money should have been given to Limpopo, and on this date, money should have been given somewhere. And one of the things that was raised in the FFFC report is that the municipal capacity grant was given 1 month before the end of the financial year. And what I'm not picking up from the Auditor General is to flag that aspect. Because if money is given a month before the financial year ends, then it's a problem in terms of adherence to the schedule of payment to municipalities.
formalities and so forth, but the AG didn't pick that up as a point of concern, because for me that's the point of concern, that that aspect of things is not covered. It's like you are happy with how things have happened. I'm just picking that up as an example. I know that sometimes there's a delay in payment to provinces. I know that you say you are not commenting on service delivery, but surely if the department withholds some funds, then it's got an impact on service delivery. And I want to hear whether your scope extends to that area of things, in terms of when, if the department says we are going to give the money on the 1st of September, you do check that indeed on the 1st of September the money moves from national to the provinces or metros. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kana. Just before probably you respond, one of the things that comes through all the time is that most of the time the audit outcome mainly depends on the quality of the financial statements submitted and the quality of the performance report that the department submits to you. And many times, I think you've made it very clear that if it were not for the fact that you give the department, not necessarily this one, an opportunity to correct some of the things that they submit, actually the outcome would have been something else. It could have been a qualified. But because you give them the opportunity to correct certain things, then the outcome became unqualified. Now, as you respond, one thing that I want to find out is that as you give them that opportunity to correct, does that go with sort of, how do I put them, training them? So that year in and year out, it's not just about them correcting, but arming them into understanding what is it that the AG needs in terms of them submitting, rather than every year you have to give them to correct, correct, correct. Is there that opportunity between the department and the AG's office to actually arm this senior management in terms of making sure that this comes down a bit, instead of every time it's becoming more that they must correct? And of course, when you talked about the three levels of assurance, you would agree with me that the first level is the most important one. The second and third are just, you know, making sure that. So if the first level, which is the management, is a problem, we are not going to get the best assurance that in terms of. I want you to agree with me, because that talks to the HR issues that we are talking about here, because we are not going to be able to improve on this audit outcome if we are not able to improve on the first level of assurance. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will try to answer. I will try to answer as best as I can, but where I probably need senior management assistance in some of the questions. I'm going to start with Honorable Ghana's questions. With regard to the transfers and in terms of the service delivery aspect, the actual testing in terms of like you said, most of the money does go to your provinces and your metros. In terms of, obviously, there's the human settlements allocation is a significant portion is your HSDG, which goes to your provinces, and then you have your USDG, which goes to your metros, and then there's that grant that you spoke about, the capacity grant, and then the remainder, that 3% that stays there. In terms of the HSDG, we do audit the outputs, the service sites, we go and verify that, but that happens at a provincial level. So for the individual provinces, we would give them the audit outcomes, but also included there, we would also have a sector approach. We'll come together, the nine provinces as well as national, to say, for the current year, what do we want to focus on in terms of the human settlement sector? For the 14-15 year, what we've
what we've identified as our focus areas, because we can't audit all aspects of the human settlement environment. For the 14-15 year, we looked at the management of the individual subsidies. We looked at the management of the grants that the transfer that goes from the provinces to the municipalities in terms of the HSDG grant I'm talking about. So in terms of those, we do have a report that's going to be included in our general report in terms of those findings that come out in the next month, 2 months or so. Where it does have a bigger focus in terms of the service delivery aspect. In terms of the outcomes, in terms of how the provinces are spending that money, in terms of whether they're complying with the HSDG, whether they're complying with DORA, that information is also included in the audit outcomes of the provinces, of the individual provinces. We do do a consolidated report, which we give to the management of human settlements. We currently budget with it, probably in the next 2 weeks we'll probably finalize it, but we'll then discuss it with the accounting officer and the committee, then maybe you can get that report from the accounting officer, where it does detail all your audit outcomes in terms of like how we've got here, the financial outcomes, your performance outcomes, but also then has a sector focus in terms of those areas. I don't know if somebody can share high level in terms of it, or maybe you know, just wait until that report comes out. I think, the general report will come out in the next 2 months. It should probably give you more insight in terms of the service delivery environment. In terms of the scheduled payments question, we do audit in terms of the approved payment to make sure that payments are done in terms of that that approved schedule. I know I'm not sure in the current year. I know we test for the USDG and the HSDG, which is the most significant portion. We might not have tested in terms of the capacity grant, because we do it on a sampling level, so we might have gone to a point where we've got 98% coverage and not done it. But we'll take that into consideration and we'll look at that grant, because it's brought to our attention now for the next audit cycle. In terms of the HR plan, you were saying in terms of the interaction that we have, I'm sorry, if you can maybe just...
I think just to make sure I understand your question, you wanted to know that in terms of the reliability of the performance information and the HR plan, before we report it at year end, do we have like continuous interaction with the department throughout the year to sort of like show them the red flags? Okay, we do actually do that. The Office of the Auditor General does do an interim audit of APPs for the following year. I'm not sure if you remember, but there was an interim audit of the 15-16 APP. Just to explain to the department, we audit the usefulness thereof, because we can't audit the reliability. Reliability only due on the report. So we do take the department through the usefulness of the next year's APP and show them the issues that are that will be possible issues for the next year, and we do give them the opportunity to correct the issues and retable the APPs they've already retabled it or resubmit.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other and maybe just to follow up in terms of the other aspect, the HR thing, we've actually had an engagement with the accounting officer last week in terms of when he's come out and he said we've got an HR plan 12-13 for 5 years, but in his opinion, that plan is no longer relevant. It's outdated, and they've actually committed to producing a new HR plan. So we do have that continuous interaction in that regard. Then in terms of the chair's question, in terms of the frustrations of having the repeat findings, what happens is, for the last 3 years, when we come to, because it's been the same issues, it's been how in the past it's been how to account for your rig expenditure, how to account for your accrual, and how to account for your commitment. Those have been the significant issues in terms of the financial statements where the department has been lacking. But every year, when we get the financials, we probably audit it within 2 weeks or so. We tell management your accruals is maybe not complete, but we also then give them recommendations in terms of how to do it, not only to how to fix it for the current year, but how to implement a system and a process so that whether it's monthly or quarterly, that the statements that they produce are credible. So we give them those recommendations. We'll actually sit with management. We tell them exactly this is what you possibly can implement, and then we also now will look at the action plan to make sure that the actions that are included in there will actually address what those goals are. But we can only go that far to say, okay, this is it. But we can't go further than that to actually do more than that. But we do. And constantly, we look at it. Are they doing it? Are they not doing it? But then we can only report on that aspect. And then the other question in terms of the first level, it is key. Therefore, I think it comes around that the committee must, in terms of those significant audit outcomes, monitor that action plan, make sure that they're actually doing what they say they're doing. Because if the first level doesn't do what they're supposed to be doing, then the other levels become less effective. And then, yeah, you can help me. Why did we choose CISO?
So, in terms of the Public Audit Act, it scopes out or spells out that the Auditor General can opt to audit and not audit certain entities. So we've opted to audit, we audit all your national departments, we audit all your provincial departments, we audit all municipalities. It's just that we haven't opted to audit these entities that you're talking about, the NHFC, SHRA, Social Housing Foundation. We do, however, monitor the auditors over these entities. We are involved, or we are consulted on the appointment of auditor over these entities, and we can't appoint an auditor unless we don't agree to that. So we are consulted. We do, at a high level, oversee audit. We provide guidance. We attend, in some instances, the audit committees. So we are aware of what's happening at these organizations. We do have a long-term strategy where one day we'll be able to hopefully maybe take back some of those. It's early days still, but we do have some sort of plans and some sort of strategy where we're moving in, we're getting closer. So at some point we probably would have had no information on these audits, but today we know the audit outcomes, today we know the rest. We even share at times key control with the department and with the chairperson. Just best I can answer it.
Thank you very much to the team. That's the responses from the Auditor General's team, and that's the report that they are giving us around the department and the two entities. Obviously, the two entities, we're dealing with them tomorrow, but the department, we're dealing with them this afternoon. I just want to hope that whatever they have shared with us, we have been able to assimilate to make sure that we will use it to the best of our ability in the afternoon when we interact with the department. Thank you very much for availing yourselves. We know that at this time of the year, you crisscross all these portfolio committees and share your expertise. We really appreciate as you've shared your time with us. And that takes us to the end of the three that we are going to deal with this morning. We have done well in terms of time. I'm very much impressed. We can break now. But remember, the department, we've always gave them 2 o'clock to come. So go and do the little things that you want to do. Lunch will be here at 1, because we had booked lunch for 1, and we finished before 1. So you can go and come back and have your lunch here. But at 2 o'clock, we'll be starting with the department. We adjourn now until 2 o'clock. Thank you very much. It's a needed break that you're going to have. Thank you.